Let's talk with Ben Young first of all. You are a convert to the religion. From what did you convert?
Primarily a Christian background. My parents, or my father, was Methodist. My mother is a witness, a Jehovah's Witness. And growing up, I went to did things just like any other African American child does, especially in the South. We went to church every Sunday during the summer. We went to Bible school. I can remember when I was about 10 years old, I actually taught Bible school because I was in South Carolina at the time, military brat. And then just in studying the religion and as I progressed, I went through the Jim Crow. And so I started looking for something else. Rather than the pie in the sky, I was looking for something else that said that gave me some meaning to life. And I was in the being a product of the 60s or 70s, I was caught up in the civil rights and the Black Panthers, and then the Nation of Islam. It was kind of a progressive movement for me. And the Nation of Islam, which was headed but then by Elijah Muhammad, and many of us now refer it to as the First Resurrection. And then I look at it and recognize it was a good thing because it made me look at other religious beliefs or religious beliefs that I didn't automatically adopt. But in my study of the Nation of Islam, I started realizing that it was not the religion proper. And so then I got into the religion proper, and I was still believe that Islam is a way of life. It's just, it is that.
How old were you when you made the conversion?
This was between 16 and 18 years old.
Was politics involved, or was it strictly spiritual?
Initially, it had to do with politics and social change.
We're talking with Ben Young and Hisham Farajalla, both Muslims, both residents of Snohomish County. Hisham, where were you raised?
Well, I was born and raised in the city of Hebron, which is Prophet Abraham's, peace be upon him, city, which is located about 30 miles south of Bethlehem, which is the birth of Jesus, peace be upon him. I spent the first 18 years of my life there. Then I just went after that, left the country for school.
And you were raised always as a Muslim. Were you exposed to other religions?
No, I was raised as a Muslim from the very beginning. Yes.
And did you have non-Muslim friends? Were there people in your community? Were you insulated against other religions at all?
I think that's a perfect question. One of my schoolmates was a Christian, which I did not know he was a Christian until 3 years after we became friends. So basically, we never been shielded from making friendship with anybody. And there was a good story behind asking about his faith, but that's not the place for it. But
why not?
Well, it's there's a lot of politics.
What
behind
are you
it.
Hiding?
but the question, no, the answer is no. We were not shielded from other faiths. We had lots of Jewish as well as Christian friends, even people with don't believe in God. They were friends as well.
We're talking on Sound Living this afternoon with Ben Young and Hisham Farajalla, and you're welcome to join the conversation. Our phone number is 303-9074, and you can also join the conversation on Facebook. You can link to it from our website at kser.org, or just search for it at 90.7 KSER. And the phone number again, 425-303-9074. Ben, was it... In your search, was it something that you felt was missing in your Christian faith that you found in Islam, or was there something more in Islam that than what was in the Christian faith?
I would say yes, but it's also a personal feeling, and to explain it, because I've tried to explain it to other people before. Many times I wind up seeming or coming off very insensitive to Christian theology, which is not a case because I revere the truth of all religions. And it's just that part of it, as I stated before, was a social change that evolved into reexamining my religious beliefs. And as a result, I took the Shahada, or the Declaration of Faith, and from that point on proclaimed to be a Muslim.
Well, how did you in your mind deal with what might have been a mutually exclusivity of the religions, in that particularly the Baptist and those religions say that you must accept Jesus Christ, whereas the Muslim religion says there is only one God and that God is Allah. That would seem to be tough to overcome.
The what do you call that? The there's a name for it. It's not. I still have a mother. I still have four sisters. They are all of the Christian belief, and we still get along very well. In fact, one of my sisters is a Republican, so even that being said...
Must make for some interesting holidays.
I don't see them that often, but it does. It does. But it also improves discourse, because we know that we can bring our own opinion and not feel like we have to watch what we say or do, because we can't divorce each other. We're always going to be sisters and brothers, so that's a good thing to me.
Well, let me invite people to join the conversation this afternoon on Sound Living as we talk with Ben Young and Hisham Farajallah. Our phone number, 303-9074. And you can join the conversation also on Facebook. And you can link to it from our website or search for it at 90.7 KSER. Let me get to the hard stuff here at the outset and see if we can separate politics from the religion. And I think for a lot of us sitting on the outside looking in, we see what is going on under the name of the Muslim, the Islamic faith, and we say, how can that be so? How can a religion justify a man strapping explosives to his body and blowing himself and others up, or using now women and young children to do that? How can a religion justify blowing up a school just because they want to teach girls how to read? How can a religion justify that? And I just will put that to you, Hashim. How can a religion justify that?
I think you ask lots of questions, and I'll try to be brief. And
we have an hour.
We have an hour. That'll be great. I think there is no justification whatsoever for what you just said. The question is how that was perceived and why it was just attached to the faith. I think that the real fact of the matter is, people first, before they can just accuse the faith, they must separate faith from culture. And that's a huge step which people must take before they can label faith to a specific actions of individuals. Islamic faith basically is a faith which composed of more than 1/5 of the population of this world we live in. They came from all walks of life. Back to the very basic of Islam, which back to education, for example. My wife, she has a higher degree than me. All my sisters are university graduated. Half of my brothers are university graduated. So Islam clearly instructs us to be educated, regardless male or female.
Were they educated in Islamic countries, or were they educated in other lands?
Both. So like my wife, she's a UW graduate, and my brother graduated from here as well, but my sister is graduated from Palestine, university is there, because they live there.
So why does the Taliban blow up schools? Because they want to educate girls.
Well, I think that's a great question. The question is, I was not there to see what they are doing and why they are doing it. And back to the basics of what Islam teaches and what culture teaches. And I always encourage people to please separate culture stereotyping from the faith itself. And this is why at Idris Mosque in Northgate, Seattle, actually, we have an open house policy since 1993, where we have visitors visit us in a weekly basis. Actually, an average of at least 100 people visit us weekly to try to reach out and learn about Islam, because we believe education is a key to eliminate or to reduce the fear and ignorance. So there is whatever people do, we don't know. We have no control over them. But Islam is the opposite of what every single thing we hear about.
Well, can we separate the religion from the culture when the culture is the religion?
No, in Islam there is a difference between culture and religion.
Let's use Saudi Arabia as an example. They are a culture. And they have the religion as their government.
Well, I think that's a good point, and it's a very tough question as well, because there is nothing I have against Saudi Arabia, nor I have something for them. Actually, I did visit their country once, but it is more. Again, when you talk about Islam, we talk about a very diverse community, society, people who follow the faith of Islam. Bin said all what he said declaration of faith, and he is there. There is no screening who is in, who is out. So the question about it is how the people of Saudi Arabia, according to their culture, understand the faith and implement it. That's their understanding. Does not mean we violate, because what I want the people to look at, the most critical things actually in the articles of faith of Islam, which people of Islamic faith believe there is life after death. That's a fact. Now, the reason I'm saying this, to show you that how culture sometimes influence. So when the main article of faith, one of the main ones, is belief there is life after death, meaning there is hell and there is heaven, everyone will do his or her best to go and end up in heaven. So now, it will be stupid of me or anybody else to do something which can lead you to go to hellfire. So if educating your sister or your wife is wrong, why am I doing it? I'm going to end up in hellfire.
Ben, I'd like to invite you to involve yourself in this conversation of culture versus the religion. You were talking about having been in Turkey for some
Correct.
Time.
I was in the military in Turkey, and during the month of Ramadan, which is the month of fasting for us, it was different, because I saw a predominantly Muslim country and how, in their observation of the month of fasting, sometimes it verged on the level of a party. And then I was in speaking with the number two religious person in the city in where I was stationed at. He explained to me that that was them. The religion proper is still the religion proper, and people are looking for this. And so you start thinking that becomes a cultural understanding, not the religion proper, when their observance of the religion is still the same. Their customary usages or things that they do throughout their life are based upon their circumstances and their environmental upbringing, but the religion is still the religion proper.
Hisham, you mentioned one of the basic tenets of the faith was there was a hell, that there is a heaven. You're not going to do anything that is going to get you into hell because you want to get to heaven. We're told that one of the tenets of the faith is that if you kill an unbeliever, it's a free pass to heaven, and you're going to have virgins and you're going to have a great time. All you have to do is kill a non-believer, and you're right to heaven. How does that fit into the concept of heaven and hell?
And this is one of the other, which actually a similar one. I was listening to Fox News. Sorry for mentioning the name, but basically, which lots of misunderstanding and misinforming and misrepresenting and mispresenting the faith to. Islam, as been said, is a complete way of life. And not anybody can issue a fatwa or issue a declaration and who going to go to hell, who going to go to heaven. Islam itself, when I said anyone wishing to understand the faith must first separate the religion from the cultural norms and styles of a society. Why? Because in Islam we go to what the Holy Book of Muslims taught us. You cannot just kill anybody. It's very clearly actually about killing. There is a verse in Islam which says that anyone killed any person unless it is for murder or spreading mischief, it is like he killed all mankind. And anybody save a soul is like saving all humanity. So you cannot just, nobody can take this verse out of just its understanding and misuse it for something else. This is what Islam is. Islam basically totally against murder, against killing, against a person who kills himself, actually, in Islam, it clearly says he or she will end up in hellfire.
But what about the honor killings that we hear of, that fathers kill their daughters because they are dating or married to an unbeliever?
And I love these questions, to be honest, and back to that same thing, to separate culture from faith. Because in Islam, I will be more than happy to come one day and talk about what we call the Islamic Sharia, Islamic law, which is some people sometimes try to make it like a scary thing which is going to take over the world. In Islam, you cannot, there is no such, reading the whole Islam, I will not find one single place in the Quran, which is the holy book of Muslims, or what we call it the Sunnah, the tradition of the Prophet, which says exactly there is something called honor killing. So if it's not there, it does not exist in the faith, it means it's culture. Nothing I can do about culture. I cannot explain culture. I cannot defend culture.
Is it then a misinterpretation of the words of Muhammad?
I don't believe it's misrepresentation as much as it is not part of the faith.
So where did it come from? I don't understand.
It's culture. And that's exactly what I'm trying to say. Culture sometimes is like back to certain countries, which let's talk about, you mentioned at the very beginning, a country in the Middle East where you see most of women, for example, total cover. You could say this is kind of culture with some understanding to the faith, but they are not wrong. In a sense, meaning that when you will not find somebody or you will not find the faith which says there's something called honor killing. I read all the what we call it fiqh books, which basically the fiqh books is the books which explain legislation in Islam and how they should apply it and rule. Not a single one, there is something called honor killing. So it's not there.
We're talking on Sound Living this afternoon with Ben Young and Hisham Farajallah, and you're welcome to join the conversation at 425-303-9074, and you can also join us on Facebook. Well, again, going back to the culture versus the religion, we just had reports in the paper today in, again, Saudi Arabia. The religious police are going from shop to shop, confiscating anything that is red, anything that is has anything to do with Valentine's Day, and they are ascribing it to that law, that Sharia law that exists.
Well, back to the country and their interpretation and their following of the faith. I mean, when they do these things, you see, back to the very basics of Islam. I think the best thing, go to the basics. In Islam, for a person to issue a ruling or to say what's right, what's wrong according to the faith, or to describe or to derive a religious judicial rulings, he or she must memorize the whole Quran. He or she must completely be fluent in Arabic and its architect. He or she must memorize all the Prophet's saying and actions by heart. Then he or she must be, and I'm coming to that very clearly, must have the mind and the ability to derive. And the most important one, he or she must live in the country and the place where they are. So being in a specific society is part of the requirement for a person to issue a ruling. That's where we'll eliminate culture, because what's applicable in Seattle, I cannot go and apply it in Europe somewhere, because they do not know my lifestyle, my life, my circumstances here. So they must understand the life I live in before they can tell me what is right, what's wrong. Actually, Ed, I read myself a fatwa from a prominent Muslim scholar who said being an American is basically I'm an infidel just by taking the citizenship of the United States. So, and that's his ruling, and he's the one who authorized that, and he agrees with the whole Gulf War to start it there. So I don't want to point fingers to anybody, but that's his understanding. To that means we all here live in U.S. more than 7 million, not Muslims. I don't understand it.
Well, let me apply that then to the fatwa on Salman Rushdie. If Salman Rushdie walked in today to our studios, would you be honor bound as a Muslim to kill him? Because a fatwa has been issued against him because of his book, Satanic Verses?
No, absolutely, I will not kill him. I have I read his book. I believe he is wrong in his book. I strongly disagree with the information and the misinformation he did. I am disappointed of how he tried to manipulate things to get fame. But I will not even lay my hand on him because in my opinion, it's not worth it.
Then why was why is he under a sentence of death?
That the person who issued it must answer it, not me. So now, having said that, do you think I violated the faith? That's the issue which I'm trying here to say. One of the main articles of faith, believing there is life after death and there is hell and heaven. So if these people who claim or issue these rulings, this is the only way it's right. It means, am I wrong? It means, am I violating the faith? In my judgment, I don't believe I violate the faith, because we read, we understand, and the majority of the Muslims, scholars, disagree with what specific one says. That's what in Islam, the difference between Islam and other religions, we don't have hierarchy. We don't have a spokesperson. And that will create, that's the beauty of it, and that will create so many personal opinions who can issue certain rulings, and you have no control over them.
Ben, you've been quiet here for a while. Care to add anything?
No. Islam is stating it very plainly. I agree with him 100%. I know that people's cultural upbringing greatly influences how they exercise their faith. I can look at some of the things that happened to me as I was growing, as I was growing up, and then as I try and apply them to everyday life, I know that part of one of the questions were what is the major difference? And you touched upon it, and it finally came to me, the word that I was trying to think of before, and it's called intercession, which is the in Christian theology, my understanding of intercession is that I need someone to intercede in my behalf in order for me to have a relationship with God. Where in the Islamic faith, we believe that your actions and your deeds in this life will determine what will happen in the next life. Not only that, is that you have a direct connection or communication with God. There is not a need for something, for an intercessor or an intermediary. And so I disagree.
Hisham, there are those who claim that contemporary Catholics in particular have sort of an a la carte approach toward their religion. They will pick and choose those aspects of the Catholic religion that they want to ascribe to and believe. It sounds a little bit like that's what you are describing as well for your faith, that you can go through and interpret the Quran as you see it comfortable for your position in life.
No, that's not exactly what I want, actually. I say the opposite. What I try to... Well,
somebody has to interpret.
Right. And that's what it is basically in Islam, first, we don't have a spokesperson. We don't have hierarchy. But there is a requirement for anyone. Actually, there is a major radio in the Puget Sound area one time, and usually I don't call in, but that person talked too much to a point I had to pick up the phone and talk to him because he was introduced as a scholar in the Islamic faith. And his reasoning why he has been studying the faith for 20 years. So I told him, I am 40. It means I know twice as much as you. And then they hang up. The question is, for the criteria, I'm talking about the criteria. Not anyone can just basically derive a ruling there. The person who derived has to be qualified. There is certainly qualification to which set forth. Number one of the main qualification is we need someone from U.S. or from Seattle who understand our environment to give us the ruling. Best example, I will take to you, will mention with you one single example which I think that will fit perfect. Interest in Islam is totally forbidden. There is no question there. One of the most, I mean, it's a totally forbidden things. Now, people who live in the West, interest is basically the basic of the society. If you'd like to wait till you save enough money to buy a house, you will never have a house. So Muslim scholars, not just people who went for a year or two or 3 years college or memorized a verse or two or a chapter, real scholars who spend their life learning the faith, debated this issue for years to explain and to understand about Muslims in the West. The overwhelming majority said to buy a house for you to shelter your family is allowed and it is not considered forbidden. Now, there is still some, they, no matter what, they were not convinced. So it's not pick and choose. It's those few scholars who debated try to issue the ruling for it.
Did they also debate interest on savings accounts and retirement accounts?
Actually, that was part of the discussion too as well. And they address it because you live in a society and this is how established. And you cannot just... it was a book. I would be more than happy to share it with you. I read it actually 4 or 5 times before I bought my house. I had to be convinced. Till I read. But the question about it is this is what I'm trying to say. You have to understand that one of the main requirements for a person to issue is to understand the environment that people live in. That's one of the main requirements. So I did not say we pick and choose. We cannot pick and choose. We have someone who understands the faith and who can tell us this is right and this is wrong. And so it's not just...
You brought up a topic, and I want to explore it a little bit further about the interpretation of the Quran and particularly the role women have in the religion. One of the interesting aspects is that unlike most of the major religions, to my knowledge, it has Muslim faith hasn't undergone any reformation. One scholar called it a product of the Middle Ages, I think, the religion. Some would call it a static faith, that it's not been examined and updated with concepts that are were valid in 572 and are no longer valid now. Would there be some areas that could benefit from reformation, from a reanalysis?
Well, I think that's a good question, but I will answer this, but let me talk to the women, because you mentioned about the women too, and because of the time, so I will use this example. I wanted to go back 1400 years ago, where the second, what we call the second caliph in Islam, which is the kind of the president of the Islamic world at that time, he was addressing the nation in one of the major mosques. So the speech was in a mosque. The audience, one of the audience, stood up, strongly disagreed with him, corrected him. He apologized, and he accepted that correction. That individual was a woman. So now, if I want to go 1,400 years ago, and I see that means the woman was part of the political system, the woman was part of the society, active members, and to correct the most knowledgeable person at that time, that means she was more educated than him. That will tell me a lot about Islam and women, but not the culture and women. So that's just to keep this in mind. Now back to the second question, which I forgot.
Are there areas that would benefit from some reformation, some updating?
Yes, that's a good point too. Now in Islam, we have what we call it school of thoughts. There are four different school of thoughts in Islam. And that means there are four major scholars. I mean, we have so many these days, they claim scholars, but that's sometimes counterproductive. But a real recognized four major scholars. One of them, his name is Imam Shafi'i. Now, that scholar, he lived at two different places. He lived in Iraq, and he moved to Egypt. So when he moved to Egypt, he changed most of his ruling he issued in Iraq. And they told him, what is going on? This is what you said in Iraq. He said, yes, but that was Iraq, not Egypt. And so that means the ruling could change with time. I hope I answered it.
It did, Ben.
For me, it is primarily a cultural understanding. When I have four sisters, and for me to go in and tell them that they could or could not do something, I have been married. And for me to go in and tell my wife that she has to do something, I've tried that once or twice. And I'm on my second marriage now, so you may have some understanding of that. It is a cultural understanding. It is not a religious understanding.
What about the idea that a man can have four wives, but a woman can only have the one husband?
Well, actually, this is a good question, and this is it's called polygamy, right? And
well,
this
in some parts of the world, it's called polygamy.
So this is actually one of the common myths which is associated to Islam. Islam actually did not originate nor outlaw polygamy. All what Islam did just regulate it. So,
but doesn't the Quran say a man can have four wives if he treats them all equally?
That's one part of the truth, but not the whole truth. So that's what it is. Is Islam did allow, and there is big difference between allowing someone to do something and ordering someone to do something. It means it is permissible, but under severe, strict conditions, a person can have more than one. The question I have with more than 1 billion. Muslims, how many of them even have more than one? And we don't want like to look at how many. I was watching CNN one time on where they said, on as we know, prostitution is legal in Vegas, and they said 50% of their customers are married men. So in Islam, that's forbidden, but for whatever reasons, under certain rules, men could have, they are allowed to have, but they are not required to have more than one wife.
Well, under what you said earlier, if someone living in Arizona it comes to the conclusion that prostitution is okay, isn't it okay if living in that society, in that culture, he has come to that conclusion? And he is a scholar and a voice of authority.
I hope he knows more. And there are certain rules in Islam which very clear forbidden, and there are certain rules which very clear allowed people to do it. And there's lots of a gray area, but prostitution is absolutely forbidden, and it's not be allowed in Islam. But that was just an example to show, for example, that in Islam, basically, is a faith, is a religion, which is totally the opposite of, unfortunately, what we hear from the media. And I encourage every single one just to come and try to visit the mosque, observe a service, get to know more. And I am certain if they have an open heart, open mind, they will, and they will change their views about the faith. And this is actually, we have been having an annual barbecue for the last 8-9 years where people can come and visit and have a nice lunch.
Ben, you mentioned that you were married. Were your wives Muslims? Did you find Muslim women? Did you?
My first was, and she converted for me, and my second was not. And it was a personal choice that they made, because it is a personal choice. I'm still going to exercise my faith in the religion proper, as is my understanding. That's just me. I know that because of all the struggles that I had in trying and in making the conversion, I would not try and force someone else to do something that is that life-changing, because it is life-changing.
We're talking on Sound Living with two Muslims living in the Snohomish County, and we invite you to join the conversation this afternoon. Ben Young and Hisham Farajala, the guests. Our phone number is 425-303-9074, and you're also welcome to join us on Facebook. You can link to it from our website or search for us at 90.7 KSER. Is there even a nascent movement in the religion for increased involvement and equality for women?
Well, I don't know if I want to call it movement, actually. Islam is the first liberation movement which occurred. Muslim women have been participating even in the battlefield more than 1,400 years ago. So this is history. I'm not running away from it. Muslim women were in public offices 1,400 years ago. Muslim women have their rights and received it before the French revolutions. So perception is different. What movement, you cannot, maybe there are so many movements for whatever reasons, but what I believe the actual movement came and liberate women more than 1,400 years ago. They have their rights, and they have, it has been protected. The question is, culture change, and I wish there would be a cultural revolution to at least give them their religious rights.
You touched briefly on my next question, and I just want to get you to expand on it a little bit with regard to the Islamic faith in a contemporary society and how it works with, for example, the prayer, where you are expected to pray five times a day in the morning, mid-afternoon, just before you in the evening, and then again just before you retire, and how that fits in with a contemporary society where you are basically expected to be working 24/7 at your computer or whatever your job is and not taking time to pray.
I think that's the perfect question. I did work in different companies. I did work I did work. Now I'm working for a major companies now and in the past, not a single time I was prevented from performing my duties and my prayers. The prayers is very flexible. You pray five times a day. You pray one time before sunrise, and you pray one time about noon. The third time will be just afternoon, which I'm going to do it now. And I was hoping after we finish and before I hit the road, I need some private space for 10 minutes to pray. And the fourth time about sunset, the fifth time is just before you retire. And those actually fit with your schedule very well. But and you do it in your office, in at home, at the mosque, wherever you are. There is a flexibility, not exactly if it is 12:25, it means you must do it 12:25. Well, if you do it 12:25, that's perfect. But if you can do it before 4 o'clock, that's great too.
Is that local time or Mecca time?
Wherever you are. You see, wherever you are, it depends on your locations. But again, these are the five prayers. All are required to pray, male or female. There is no difference between both. Actually, women, they have the edge of praying, actually, to be honest, more than men. But this is the religion. And so it is, it is again, depends on the local timing.
I want to thank you both for being my guests this afternoon, Ben Young and Hashim Farajallah, both Muslims, both living and working in Snohomish County.